Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're tackling something that, well, most of us probably take for granted. Positivity. Is it always a good thing? Have you ever stopped to think, maybe, just maybe, too much positivity could actually cause harm? It sounds a bit strange, I know, but that's exactly what we're digging into today. We're unpacking Chapter 21, Can Positivity Cause Harm? It's from a really insightful book called A Practical Empath, Rewire Your Mind by Scott Howard Swain. And this book introduces something called the PEP system. That's PEP, the Practical Empathy Practice System.
That's right. And this chapter, well, the PEP system overall, it really helps you navigate your emotional world, both what's going on inside you and how you connect with others. We're going to look at, you know, the surprising downsides of always trying to be cheerful or making others be cheerful. And we'll see how genuine connection, real understanding, can be so much more powerful. Fundamentally, PEP is about liberation, understanding, connection, responsibility, clarity, and empowerment for you and for others. And it does this using basically three key things: observing without judging, recognizing feelings, and then making guesses about what someone values, needs, or wants. We'll see that pop up.
Yeah, definitely. And honestly, get ready to have some assumptions challenged. We're diving into authenticity, what real empathy looks like, and how we can help ourselves and the people around us become more emotionally independent. Mm-hmm. And don't worry, we'll boil down the key stuff from the chapter so it's easy to digest. Okay, so let's get into this core idea, this paradox almost. Can being too positive actually be destructive? It really flies in the face of a lot of self-help advice, doesn't it? The book highlights this great quote from Brené Brown that kind of sets the tone perfectly. She says, "The truth just is, rarely can a response make something better. What makes something better is connection."
Wow, that really hits home.
It really does. And straight away, the chapter brings up this concept of masking. You know, we tend to think of masks as either fully on or fully off, like hiding or being totally open. But the book suggests it's more like a dial, a spectrum. Maybe you hide just a tiny bit of yourself here, or almost all of yourself there, depending on who you're with. Think about a job interview versus chatting with your best friend. It's natural. But, and this is the key question the chapter raises, what happens when that mask is this overly positive one? What if it stops you or someone else from really dealing with difficult stuff, like disappointment or grief? What does that do to how you see yourself? And maybe more importantly, how deep can your connections really be if you can't handle the tough emotions?
That's such a crucial point. And the author shares this really raw personal story in the chapter that makes it so clear. He talks about this multi-year dance experience he was part of, like a semi-guided group thing. And after dancing for 2 hours, they'd all sit in a circle and share. He admits his first reaction when people shared negative things, a bad week, not liking the music, a tragedy, was actually anger. He thought, they're polluting the space, our mind space. Why can't they just be positive? And I have to admit, that initial reaction, probably more common than we'd like to think, but then something shifted. He describes this one moment. It really changed everything for him. Someone shared that their dog had just died, and how this immense sadness just colored their whole dance experience, made it painful seeing others happy. And instead of irritation, the author felt something completely different. He says, "I had a feeling in my chest and throat of extreme sadness, and tears welled up. I also felt a sort of bittersweet joy." He felt honored. Honored by their humility, courage, and trust to share that deep pain. And that moment, it sparked this whole new journey for him, exploring parts of himself he'd kept hidden. It led to, as he puts it, a new level of authenticity.
It's a powerful story. And it connects so well to this broader idea of accepting things as they are, the good and the bad. You see this in Buddhism, right? Accepting the present moment. Equanimity. Understanding this is how it is instead of fighting reality. Mm. But the author adds this really important caveat. He says, just bowing to all that is, like total acceptance, isn't quite his approach either. Extreme acceptance can also be unhelpful, just like extreme resistance. And this ties back to authenticity and trust. If you're hiding your struggles behind this mask of constant positivity, eventually some of that darkness, as the book calls it, might peek through, that inconsistency. That can really damage trust. Being real is key, not just being happy for the sake of it.
Okay, so if forcing positivity and hiding our real feelings isn't the way to go, what does that mean for how we react when someone else is hurting? Because our instinct, my instinct anyway, is usually to try and make it better, right? See a kid crying, you want to stop the tears, friends down, point out the silver lining, try to cheer them up. It's almost automatic.
Exactly. And that impulse leads to a really critical question the author poses. Is my interference really helpful here? Who am I really serving? When we jump in to try and change how someone feels, there's this push-pull thing that happens. And part of that push-pull, maybe unintentionally, can send a message like, hey, those feelings you have, not okay, get over them, hide them. The chapter even mentions an old saying, when we defend or save someone, we deprive them of the opportunity to practice saving themselves. Think about that. Our help might actually be stopping them from building their own emotional muscles.
Whoa. That really flips the script on how we think about comforting someone. It makes you pause, definitely. So if jumping in with solutions or forced cheerfulness isn't the answer, are we supposed to just, what, stand there like robots and ignore their pain? That feels wrong. Cold, even.
No, not at all. The book is very clear. The alternative to fixing isn't ignoring. It's empathy. Empathy is often the most powerful thing you can offer. It doesn't make the pain vanish, poof, but it provides warmth. Companionship. It says, I see you're in this tough place, and I'm here with you. It accepts where they are instead of demanding they be somewhere else emotionally. Think about saying things like, you feeling pretty worried about that? Or, wow, that sounds really scary. Or even trying to guess the need underneath. I'm guessing it's hard to feel so responsible. Or, do you wish you could just trust him? Or maybe, do you wish you knew for sure that you were safe? These are offered as guesses, right? Not definitive statements. They open a space for connection. They let the person feel heard, truly heard, without pressure.
And this connects to a really important rule in the PGP system, doesn't it? That we don't make anyone feel anything. Like, our actions might trigger a feeling in someone, sure, but how they process it is ultimately up to them, which means we need to be careful with our words. So instead of, what you said made me feel angry, or did seeing that make you feel sad, PEP suggests phrasing like, when you heard that, did you feel angry? Or, seeing that, were you feeling sad? It puts the feeling back with them.
Precisely. It's a subtle shift in language, but it shows respect for their internal experience. It's not about assigning blame or causation for feelings.
Okay, this makes a lot of sense for in-the-moment interactions. But let's zoom out a bit. What about the bigger picture? What's the long-term damage if we're constantly shutting down negative emotions, especially when we're talking about kids? That seems potentially huge.
Oh, absolutely. The book brings up neuroplasticity, how kids' brains are still developing, how they form habits and beliefs much more easily. And the argument it makes is pretty stark. If a child is upset, scared, angry, and our go-to response is always a reward to distract them, or a punishment, or just trying to jolly them out of it, instead of offering empathy, what are we teaching them? We're essentially teaching them that discomfort, pain, fear, anger, these are bad, unacceptable, things to be buried or fixed instantly, and the potential result down the line. Adults who are, and I'm quoting the book here, afraid to look inside themselves, ignorant of how to express themselves honestly, and maybe even addicted to positivity and comfort. Always needing something external, snacks, shopping, likes on social media, maybe even drugs to avoid sitting with difficult feelings. They don't develop that inner resilience.
That's quite a warning. But PEP offers a way forward, right? A practical way to build independence instead. I love the example in the chapter. A child says, Mom, I'm bored. Instead of jumping in with solutions, go play outside, read a book. The empathetic PEP response is something like, I hear you. You are bored. Then maybe guessing the need. Are you wanting more connection with someone? Or maybe some mental stimulation, physical activity, a challenge?
Exactly. The parent isn't taking responsibility for fixing the boredom. Their job is food, shelter, safety, not constant entertainment. By doing this, they avoid creating that dependency, those power struggles over make me happy. It lets the child learn to identify their own needs and find ways to meet them. That's huge for development. And just to be clear, the book isn't saying never offer reassurance. Or never give advice. That wouldn't be realistic or even kind sometimes. It's about being more, well, thoughtful. More conscious about how our actions, even the positive ones, might actually be fostering dependency or stunting emotional growth. It really encourages you to ask yourself, okay, when I jump in to reassure or advise, what need of mine am I trying to meet? Is it my need to be seen as helpful, to feel needed, to have control, to feel respected? Or maybe just to avoid the discomfort of sitting with their pain?
Oof. That's a confronting question, but so important, because often, maybe most of the time, people just want to be heard, right?
That's off of the core of it, just feeling understood.
So the chapter gives a really practical strategy for this, which I found super helpful. It suggests offer empathy first, really try to connect with their feeling, and then maybe ask, would you like some reassurance right now? Or maybe some advice. It puts them in the driver's seat.
Exactly. And building on that, another great tip, if you do offer reassurance or advice, maybe check in afterwards.
Yeah.
Ask for feedback. Something simple like, was it helpful to hear that?
Yeah.
If they say no or kind of shrug, you could ask, okay, what would be helpful right now? And
yeah.
If they honestly don't know, that's okay too. Then you can default back to empathy. Maybe offer some empathy to yourself first, because it can be hard when you can't fix it. and then offer it to them again. And again, this loops back to those PEP basics. Observe, identify feelings, guess needs. It works for navigating these tricky moments too.
You can really see how using these techniques could totally change the feel of a conversation. The chapter has some great examples, doesn't it? Like Jane, who feels like her positivity mask is just getting too heavy. And Bob doesn't try to cheer her up. He just uses empathy to help her see her own desire for authenticity.
Mm-hmm. Or the one with Emma, mourning her dog. Mm. Liam doesn't offer platitudes. He just provides that safe, empathetic space for her grief. Those dialogues really show PEP in action. It takes interactions from kind of superficial problem solving to something much deeper, more connecting.
So let's try and wrap this up. Today, we've really dug into this surprising idea that positivity, especially when it's forced or relentless, can actually do harm. We've talked about how crucial authenticity is. Acknowledging all parts of ourselves, even the darkness, isn't weakness, it's wholeness. And we've looked hard at the difference between jumping in with quick fix reassurance versus offering the real gift of empathy. And how focusing on empathy can help foster emotional independence, both in kids and adults.
Yeah, and the key takeaway, I think, is that allowing ourselves and others to experience the full spectrum of emotions, including the difficult ones, isn't about wallowing. It's actually the opposite. It's the pathway to genuine connection, deeper understanding, and ultimately stronger, more trusting relationships. It's about being real.
So as you head back into your day, here's something to chew on. Think about a time recently when your first instinct was to try and happy someone up, maybe offer unsolicited advice. Now imagine if instead you just offered empathy, just sat with them in their feeling, fully accepting where they were in that moment without needing to change it. What might have shifted in the conversation, in the relationship, maybe even inside you? Something to definitely think about. Until next time, keep diving deep.